Venezuela has a president that was elected democratically. The democratic voting that took place to bring him into office may be questioned by some. However, he is the president of Venezuela. Now there's a push to prevent him from continuing his second term. In this edition of the debate, we will look at why entities like the Lima Group and the Venezuelan opposition want Maduro to discontinue in his capacity, and whether the U.S. has influenced any of the regional countries to take this stance.
Venezuela's opposition-run Congress says Nicolas Maduro will be usurping the presidency after he takes office for his second six-year stint on January 10. Maduro won a much-criticized presidential election last May. United States and a host of other nations were quick to question the validity of the election that was brutally boycotted. The new chief of the National Assembly says the legislature will confront Maduro and seek free elections as soon as possible.
Since Maduro will be usurping the presidency after January 10, this National Assembly should ensure fair representation of the Venezuelan people.
But socialists defend the legitimacy of Maduro and accuse the opposition of pursuing a U.S.-dictated agenda.
The opposition led Congress is part of a purported U.S.-backed coup against the Venezuelan president, but this conspiracy will not succeed.
Maduro took to Twitter to defend his government's legitimacy. He says his legitimacy has been given to him by the vote of Venezuelan people. While Venezuela's legislative branch refuses to recognize Maduro as the country's legitimate president, both the judiciary and the so-called Constituent Assembly claim he was re-elected by the people for another six-year term. Jesus Silva, Press TV, Caracas.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, professor of journalism at the State University of New York, Carl Grossman, joins us from New York, and also author and university professor Daniel Kovalik joins us from Pittsburgh. Gentlemen, welcome. Carl Grossman, let me first start with you. Why is there such a push to force out an elected president, a sitting president, from power, namely the Venezuelan president Nicolas Maduro, to discontinue his second term?
Well, I think Maduro, like his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, has been less than democratic. There's a term used in Latin America, caudillo, for a strong man. And both were Maduro now posturing as powerful strong men. Now, this is not unique to Latin America. In fact, here in my country, the United States, we have a president named Trump, who I think would love to be a caudillo. In Russia, we have Putin and so forth. But if you take the measure of press freedom, and I've been a journalist all my adult life, the level of press freedom these days in Venezuela is terrible, just awful, the suppression of the press. And I think that's just indicative of a country which, despite well, its ideals under Hugo Chavez has descended into a nation dominated very severely by a strong man, and that's why Congress would not like to see Maduro in a second six-year term.
Well, David Kovalik, do you think that the push at this point we're looking at a Lima Group, which is a group comprised of 14 countries. We're looking at Canada, and of course, more pronounced than those entities is the United States, to push a sitting president or to counter him continuing his second term. Do you think that's the right move to make?
No, of course not. I mean, first of all, let's get a little historical perspective here. The United States has never accepted the Chavista government under Hugo Chavez, dating back to 1999, or his successor Maduro, dating back to 2013 after Chavez died. The U.S., in cahoots with many of the same people in Venezuela that are now saying they don't recognize Maduro, actually carried out a coup in 2002 against Chavez, in which Hugo Chavez, who had been democratically elected, was kidnapped, taken away by a helicopter to an island, and then the opposition threw out the Constitution, disbanded the Supreme Court, disbanded the National Assembly, and the U.S. recognized that coup immediately until it was overturned in a couple days by the people of Venezuela. The point is, the opposition we're talking about in Venezuela is not a democratic opposition. The U.S. does not support democracy in Venezuela or anywhere else. This is all about U.S. hegemony in the region and trying to maneuver to get a government in Venezuela that is more favorable to U.S. Economic and geopolitical interests in the region. And so on that basis, I think this is the wrong move.
Okay, Carl Grossman, there are quite a number of points that our guests there made from Pittsburgh. Let's first go with the notion of the opposition, in which the Venezuelan parliament is controlled by this opposition. And of course, the opposition is accusing Maduro of using force and intimidation in order for him to remain in power. What is your view on the opposition? And are they being backed or influenced in any shape or form by the U.S.?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they're is U.S. influence. But again, none of this excuses the behavior of Maduro or before him Chavez. Let me jump to another country about which I wrote a book, and there are great similarities. I wrote a book, Nicaragua, America's New Vietnam, and it was about U.S. intervention in Central and South America, and in particular in Nicaragua. And it was all about the Sandinista Revolution, a very extraordinary revolution, very special, very unusual, with the highest of ideals. But now you have Daniel Ortega, who is the president of Nicaragua, his wife, the vice president, Maria Murillo, and Daniel Ortega, would be a Cordillo too, one of these strong men too. So, given deplorable U.S. intervention south of the U.S. border, given likely intervention in Venezuela, and probably now today in Nicaragua, still this doesn't excuse the kind of behaviors exhibited by Maduro or Ortega. I believe in democracy with a small d, and also believe in non-interference by other countries in the functioning of other nations. And this is not a black and white situation.
Well, why is it not a black and white situation, Daniel Kowalik? I mean, are we looking at, again, another country that the U.S. perhaps is interested in if they are interfering in the form and manner that they are, and all fingers point to it that it's doing so? Are we looking at the fact that Venezuela has oil, and that is perhaps one of the driving factors?
Well, yes, of course. And let me just, I mean, I have to very strongly disagree with what some of the things my colleague just said. If you want to talk about strongmen in the region, and you want to talk about repression by the government, let's talk a bit about Alvaro Uribe, who was the president of Colombia until fairly recently, who was a very close ally of the United States. Under him, 10,000 people were murdered in cold blood in what is known as the false positive scandal. That is repression. There is nothing like that happening in Nicaragua, nothing like that happening in Venezuela. And yet Uribe is still seen as a very close friend of the United States, even won the Presidential Medal of Freedom from George W. Bush. This is not about democracy or repression. The U.S. supports the most repressive governments on earth. Saudi Arabia, for example, comes to mind. The new president of Brazil comes to mind, who's now aggressively taking on the indigenous peoples in his own country. The U.S. has never supported democracy in Latin America. It's largely undermined it. This is about control. This is about access and control of oil, as you mentioned, in Venezuela. And it's about geopolitical interests that the United States has under the Monroe Doctrine, which has never been renounced by the United States.
Carl Grossman, when you take a look at the situation in Venezuela, are you the many that think that if Maduro was not to be there in power and if he was to just leave office, that it's going to help Venezuela and its problems, and based on what many are saying, that it's going to help restore democracy to the country?
I don't know. I really don't know. Incidentally, I don't disagree with what the previous speaker said about U.S. intervention in Central and South America. And as I say, I find it outrageous in my book, Nicaragua, America's New Vietnam, and it would have been America's New Vietnam if it wouldn't have been for the Iran-Contra scandal and the U.S. then not invading Nicaragua. In my book, I quote George Washington's farewell address about the United States not entangling itself.
Okay.
The offending other countries. Get back to black and white. As to Maduro or Ortega being absolute good guys and the opposition just U.S. manipulated pawns, it's not as clear as that. I think there's a lot of blame, frankly, on both sides, but particularly, and I go back to Nicaragua here, here was this hopeful, terrific, in my view, revolution. And now Daniel Ortega would be the Cordillo. Now, thousands of people are not being killed, murdered.
Okay.
In Nicaragua, Venezuela.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to jump in quickly
Colombia.
Here. I do apologize.
Hundreds of people are being shut down.
We're getting disconnected as you were speaking off and on, so I do apologize for jumping in. But Daniel Kovalik, I'd like to come to you. We need to open up this possibility of the U.S. engagement or opposition to Venezuela, and what type of actions perhaps are being taken based on some statements that have been made. This started last August, but I'm going to ask you about what the U.S. President Trump said when he casually mentioned a military option for Venezuela back then. And, of course, that really had quite a bit of an uproar in Latin America. At the same time, you had the then Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who talked about a possibility of ousting the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro militarily. Do you think that that is something that the U.S. is actually contemplating along with some of the regional countries?
I do believe it's on the table, unfortunately. Again, the U.S. has already backed a coup that succeeded for a couple days back in 2002. The U.S. has been threatening some type of military intervention in Venezuela for a number of years, even back to when Obama on two occasions declared Venezuela a threat to national security, which is a joke, frankly. I think the U.S., given its track record in Latin America, which is abysmal, and which anyone who's been paying attention knows is abysmal, does not want to engage in a direct military intervention. But I fear that it will use Brazil and possibly Colombia as a proxy to carry out some sort of a military intervention. I think that is a very real possibility. And let's remember that the U.S. supported a coup in Honduras in 2009. The U.S. supported a coup in Haiti in 2004, in which the U.S. participated in the forcible removal of Father Jean-Bertrand Aristide, not only from the presidency in Haiti, but from the country. He was forcibly taken into a plane and sent to Central Africa. So the U.S. is very capable of a military intervention in Latin America, even to this day.
Well, Carl Grossman, talk about pressure. Maduro has been experiencing that for quite some time, but just days ago you have the Lima Group, which I mentioned in the beginning of the program. This consists of 14 countries that were formed, in essence, to help Venezuela come out of this crisis. And 13 of those countries are actually pushing Maduro not to continue with his second term, and they're stopping diplomatic relations with Maduro on this. First of all, your reaction to that, and aren't they afraid that they could become a victim one day?
Well, I wonder about that decision. I wonder, getting back to U.S. intervention, whether the United States had a role with some of those countries. I wish in Venezuela, like in Nicaragua, they could be clear and clean elections without interference by anybody outside of those countries. And let the people decide on Maduro. Let the people decide as to whether Daniel Ortega and Murillo should be the leaders of that country onward into the future. I think what we need here is democracy.
Okay, how can a country decide that, Daniel Kovalik, when you have sanctions that have been obviously imposed by the U.S.? The European Union has actually weighed in heavily on Nicolas Maduro also, not really recognizing him. In that respect, you don't have a chance, you don't give the country a chance to actually progress economically, which has led to some of the problems. Not that Venezuela did not make mistakes in terms of some of the decisions that are being made to help with the economy. Isn't that then stripping away the country's sovereignty, preventing it from advancing economically?
Well, of course, that is the case. You know, let's look at the United States for a moment. I think there's a lot of reasons to question the legitimacy and fairness of U.S. Elections and democracy. We see very gross forms of gerrymandering throughout the U.S., which largely have solidified Republican elections. We have seen hundreds of thousands of voters wrongfully taking over voter rolls, people being disenfranchised, mostly people of color, mostly poor people. We look at North Carolina, where we see, you know, very blatant voter fraud in the recent elections. The point is, you know, the U.S., which holds itself out as some beacon of freedom and democracy, which purports to judge every other country for whether it's democratic or not, is not so democratic. And yet no one is calling for regime change in the United States. We have to get back to a situation where we honor the UN Charter, we honor other countries' sovereignty, and we let them deal with their own problems. We let them develop on the way that they feel they need to, and in which they grow democratically on the path that they wish. And it's not our business to be judging that, particularly to the point of sanctioning countries in ways that make their people suffer, which we're doing right now to Venezuela, to Nicaragua, and to Iran. It's not only illegal, but immoral.
Carl Grossman, one periodical by the name of Foreign Policy, you might be familiar with it, said that don't focus on regime change in Venezuela. That was its headline, saying that how Maduro has held on to power, something to think about, and why what follows him won't likely be better. Do you agree with this particular viewpoint?
I think it's a bit speculative as to whether there could be an improvement over Maduro, certainly in terms of press freedom, and democracy, again with a small d, Maduro certainly can be improved on.
And Daniel Kovalik, what do you see coming up for Venezuela? Can't have a country continue with 1,000,000% inflation. I think that's the last count. You can't have a country continue with, obviously, the severe economic challenges that they're facing. So what can Maduro do in the position that he is? Obviously, he feels comfort when it comes to countries like Russia and China in terms of seeing how they can help with them trying to sustain itself.
Yes, well, it is a very difficult situation he's in. As you said, he's made his own share of mistakes, as all of us, by the way, do as human beings. But first and foremost, these sanctions need to be lifted against Venezuela to give it a fair shot. at lifting itself out of its economic woes. And I think Venezuela, to deal with this crisis, first and foremost, should do exactly what Iran recently did and go to the International Court of Justice and try to get these sanctions lifted. Now, I understand the U.S., being the lawless country it is, doesn't recognize the jurisdiction anymore of the World Court over itself. But nonetheless, I think that Venezuela has a very good case challenging these sanctions under international law and should do that. Meanwhile, yes, I think that Venezuela will have to find closer economic friendships in countries like Russia, like China, and get off the U.S. dollar so that it will not be so vulnerable to these types of sanctions. And you're going to see more and more countries doing that, by the way, because the U.S. is sanctioning something like 36 countries at this time. The U.S. is going to sanction itself out of the world market is what it's going to do.
Well, Carl Grossman, it's not new news that Venezuela has turned to Russia and also to China, but more so Russia. I'm curious as to find out what Russia can do for Venezuela. I mean, is Russia going to involve Venezuela in some type of political game that's going to have gains for it, for himself, for itself? Or is it going to come out more forcefully? We saw how Russia came into the picture when it came to a country like Syria. Do you foresee that then being something that is a possibility when it comes to Venezuela in terms of Russia?
Well, Russia can certainly be supportive economically of Venezuela, as the Soviet Union before Russia was supportive of Cuba. On the other hand, get back to Trump. We have in this country a president, God knows what he's going to do tomorrow, what he might do in an hour from now, volatile and mercurial and irrational. And if, for example, Russia attempts to, and I've been reading about this, develop a military presence in Venezuela, this guy and his national security advisor, Bolton, and the band of scoundrels around him are capable of doing some things that could endanger, well, can endanger us all. So, yeah, Russia can help Venezuela, but it'll have to be done in an intelligent, supportive way, particularly with this unintelligent U.S. administration under Trump.
Very well. We're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Professor of Journalism at State University of New York, Carl Grossman, and also author and University Professor Daniel Kovalik. Thank you for your comments. Do join us for another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tarbayis, goodbye. Until next time.